Welcome to the America's Workforce Radio Podcast, the flagship production of the American Workers Radio and Podcast Network, where organized labor and its never-ending fight to protect the rights of the American worker come first. Now, presented by LIUNA, Laborers International Union of North America, here's your host, Ed Flash Ferens.
Winning big with batteries. UAW cheering a $3 billion investment. Meanwhile, the machinists end a two-month-long strike, and they're pretty happy because they're going to see some higher wages. And today on the show, it's LIUNA Local 169 out of Nevada, and it's our first Friday with Fred. Welcome to the Friday, May 6th edition of America's Workforce, where we are available on at least six platforms. That includes Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, iHeartRadio, Spotify, Pandora, and Stitcher. We have two guests on the show today. Normally, we have Dorsey Hager. He is a little tied up today. I know he is hard at work on that Intel project down in Central Ohio, and we're going to have to reschedule him. So what we're doing instead, we're going to go out to Nevada, and we are going to join Local 169 on behalf of LIUNA, our presenting sponsor. LIUNA is the Laborers International Union of North America, and their website is local169.com. And we're going to check in with Skip Daly. Skip Daly is the business manager. He's been a member of the Laborers Union since 1978. That's a long time. That's when Jimmy Carter was in office. He's been a business manager for the local for 21 years. Also has been an assemblyman for District 31 for four terms, and he's currently running for State Senate. That would be District 13. Eloy Hara will also be joining in on the conversation, and he's been a member of that local. Again, that would be 169 for 22 years, 16 years working as a assistant business manager, and he will be the business manager when Skip retires, which is going to be at the end of this month. So we'll talk about the territory over there, and one of the big things that's going on, especially out west, solar projects, and there's a couple of current projects and ones that are planned for the future. You think about that area. Yeah, there's a lot of sunshine. So let's harness that energy and create some good union jobs. And that's exactly what we're going to be talking about. We'll also touch on the training center. That's pretty impressive training center there for Local 169. Again, the website is local169.com. Later in the show, we're going to check in with Fred Redmond, number two man in the AFL-CIO. He is secretary treasurer. Had that position since the end of March, I believe. That's right. And Fred is up for election coming up in June. In fact, the whole slate of the AFL-CIO, Liz Shuler, Fred Redmond, and I don't know who number three is going to be. Hopefully he'll give us some insight on that. Fred was recently down in Panama talking about organizing with the union brothers and sisters there. And we're also going to talk about inflation. And this is something I addressed on the show a couple days ago. A lot of people are concerned about what's going on in America, and it's not just America, it's all over the world. I mean, you're seeing prices go up, gas prices go up. When gas prices go up, everything else follows. So the AFL-CIO took it upon themselves to educate everybody, myself included, why costs are going up and how to fix it. I urge you to go to AFLCIO.org. and check out the flyer. Maybe you might want to post this in your local or in your business office. Because as you know, when costs go up, the guy in the White House always gets the blame. That's just the way it is. And you can chime in on this. Take the survey. AFLCIO.org/member survey. Fred will talk about that. And it's pretty simple when you take a look at the whole picture. Supply chains, manufacturing, jobs that went overseas, and some of those are coming back. You throw in corporate greed, add all that up. And you know, I mean, when it comes to corporate, you know the oil companies are making a chunk of change right now. Oh, they're saying, well, we have no problem. There's a war in Ukraine. I get that. But you know they're jacking up those prices and increasing their stocks. There's no doubt about that. But how to fix it? Upgrade our infrastructure. bring those jobs back from China, increase wages. Pretty simple formula. So let's just get it done, okay? I want to talk about batteries, and hats off to the UAW. I know they've been driving this for years. The labor movement stood alongside Secretary of Energy Jennifer Granholm and Representative Debbie Dingell. This was Monday, as the Department of Energy announced an investment of more than $3 billion. Let me repeat that, $3 billion to build a strong domestic battery supply chain. And we're talking high-quality jobs that come with it. This is a huge step in the task of implementing the bipartisan infrastructure law support for battery research, for manufacturing, for battery processing, and recycling. You got to recycle those batteries. I mean, eventually they're going to wear themselves out. Where do you put them? This is all part of the components of the infrastructure bill. And when all is said and done, it'll help electrify transportation, store renewable energy, and create good jobs, union jobs. That's what we want. In Detroit, Cindy Estrada, who's vice president of the UAW, highlighted how the next generation of vehicle manufacturing and technology jobs must be good union jobs, must support existing manufacturing communities, and must be accessible to a diverse workforce for generations to come. So hats off. You know the UAW has been wholeheartedly pushing that program and making sure that there's good union jobs that are all connected with that. Well, after a strike that lasted nearly 2 months, workers at Cummins locations, this is in New England, have achieved the guaranteed pay raises that they fought for. After management attempted to implement inconsistent and subjective pay-for-performance rules, the local, that would be 447, went on strike. Well, after that, they built solidarity with allies, organized a rally that attracted numerous community organizations as well as leaders. Their assistant directing business representative is Mike Vardabedian. I hope I pronounced that correctly. Mike said, "Our members of Cummins held strong to get a contract that values their hard work and will make life better for themselves as well as their families. We want to express our sincere thank you to the New England community and elected officials for their unwavering support." And by the way, in addition to guaranteed pay raises over the next 3 years, the new agreement includes more paid holidays, discretionary leave, increased on-call pay, as well as other benefits. All things that happen because of a strong union. So hats off to Machinist Local 447 in New England. All right, quick break. When we come back, we're going out to the state of Nevada. Check in with our brothers at Local 169. That's LIUNA Local 169. Back in a few minutes.
This is America's Workforce.
It takes LIUNA to build North America's infrastructure. From roads and bridges to schools and skyscrapers, the men and women of LIUNA, the Laborers International Union of North America, build the projects we depend on. From constructing the Freedom Tower on the site of the former World Trade Center to untangling Washington, D.C.'s congested interstate, LIUNA members do the work that matters. Find out what it takes to be built by LIUNA at LIUNA.org. That's LIUNA.org.
The United Steelworkers of America represent over 70,000 workers in the state of Ohio. Steelworker members enjoy the benefits of some of the best contracts of any workers in the world. Many of your friends, neighbors, and relatives are members of one of the most effective democratic unions in our country. With the pressures unorganized workers are under in today's economy, you need to join them. So call the Steelworkers Organizing Office at 216-292-5683 or toll free at 1-800-443-3752.
The AFL-CIO is a proud sponsor of America's Workforce Radio. United by efforts to raise wages, listeners to this show and workers all across America are beginning to turn a corner and drive the economic debate. The AFL-CIO is comprised of 12.5 million working people from 56 unions, but we stand with and fight for everyone who is working for a better life. For more information about our raising wages agenda, go to AFLCIO.org.
America's Workforce is being brought to you in part by the Communication Workers of America.
Now, back to Ed Flash Ferens with America's Workforce.
And, of course, you can check us out on Facebook and follow us on Twitter. Twitter handle AWF Union Podcast, AWF Union Podcast. All right, let's go to Reno, Nevada right now. Joining us on line number one, we have two gentlemen, Skip Daly and Eloy Hara. And Skip is the business manager of Labor's Local 169, LIUNA 169. LIUNA, as you know, Labor's International Union of North America, presenting sponsor of this show, America's Workforce, for many, many years. We appreciate what Terry O'Sullivan has brought to the table, and we try to go around the country checking in with various LIUNA locals. Skip Daly has been a member of the union since 1978, business manager for the local for 21 years. He's also been an assemblyman for Assembly District 31. That was for four terms, currently running for State Senate District 13. Skip, I'm going to start with you. I understand you're retiring at the end of May, and you're going to turn the reins over to Eloy. But let's talk about your local 169, your territory. I mentioned Reno, Nevada, the amount of people in the local. Fill me in on all the details. Go ahead, Skip.
Sure. Thank you. So Local 169 primarily represents construction workers that work construction local, heavy highway, building, and specialty subcontractors, asbestos, flagging, and everything in between. The territorial jurisdiction is the northern half of the state of Nevada. So we have a very large jurisdiction. If you're familiar with Nevada, it's basically Tonopah north to the Oregon and Idaho borders. And we go from Utah to California, east and west. So
I've been reading a lot about Nevada, too, as far as its union presence. And I know it's a right-to-work state. I know the culinary workers are very, very active there. But maybe you could speak to that, because it seems like you got a lot of socially active members. I'm sure you could speak to the construction industry, but maybe you can tell our listeners how you stand right now, especially in the scheme of things in the country.
Well, I think Nevada overall, statewide, obviously, our big brothers in southern Nevada and Las Vegas, higher population in larger numbers. But we do very well, especially in the construction trades in Nevada, and not just the laborers, but all of the crafts are well represented in the north and the south. And then you mentioned the Culinary Union in Las Vegas. They have a couple of hotels up here in the north, but their main presence, Southern Nevada, largest union in the state, 60,000 some members. But actually, Nevada's union presence is substantial, and we do very well, right to work notwithstanding.
I gotcha. I know the culinary workers got hit during the pandemic. Now, construction, different kind of story. Construction was essential. Maybe you could fill us in on how you navigated. We're still in the pandemic, but how your workers held up. You got any details you can share with us?
No, we did very well, both north and south. We coordinated across the board. And yes, we were considered essential. And so our members really kind of, they kept working straight through. At the beginning, we had to implement some of the rules, the face coverings and the social distancing and various things. And the employers were working on their protocols and various things. But everybody worked together, and we got through it with flying colors, if you ask me. We did have some minor outbreaks on a few jobs here. I understand our counterparts in Southern Nevada on some larger jobs, the stadium and a few others, had a few outbreaks, and they had some issues they had to deal with. But here in Local 169 in the north, we were very lucky, and hours kept up, and the weather was good, and we had a lot of work hours, and we had a lot of work. We had a very good year last year, and the pandemic notwithstanding, most of our members were able to come through that pretty well.
It's good to hear. I know it's some big projects you're working on right now. We'll get into that a little bit later. But just going back to when you started at the union, 1978, Jimmy Carter was the president at that time. That was a long time ago. What made you decide to go into this line of work? I mean, maybe you could kind of paint a picture for us. I know you were a lot younger then, you know, and you probably never thought that you'd be there as long as you have. So talk to me about that, Skip.
Yeah, and my when I was 18, my father-in-law at the time was a bricklayer. And so he got me a job as a hod carrier, mason tender, when I was 18 years old. And the contractor he was working for was a union contractor, and it's kind of a funny story. Here I am 44 years later and the business manager of the local union, and after I was there working about a week, they told me, he says, well, hey, you better go down and join the union before they come out here and bust us, right? And I looked at him and I said, what's the union, right?
Yeah.
So we've come a long way since then, and you know, so I've always tried to have a little bit better explanation on what the union is and go from there. But so when I was 18, I started in the masonry as a hod carrier and did that for several years, and then got into more highway road work, bridge construction, did some building work, spent 18 years in the field as a construction craft labor before I started working in the office.
That's 18 years of age. That's kind of a magic time in people's life. I mean, you get the right to vote. You're footloose and fancy free. I know some go to college, some do what you did. And it's funny, too, because I had a conversation some months ago. This was for our Labor Day show last year with Marty Walsh. Uh-huh. And as you know, Marty Walsh came from your union. It was a different local. It was 226 out of Boston. And he did the same thing. He was 18 years old. He got involved. He never thought he was going to get into that line of work. I mean, there were some folks in his family that were laborers, but look at him today. He's running the labor department. I mean, you never know what's going to happen when you start out like that, especially when you got good people behind you. You know, I want to move over to Eloy. Eloy Hata has been a member of the local for 22 years. Again, we're talking with Local 169 out of Reno, Nevada. Eloy, talk to me about yourself. What made you decide to get involved in this line of work?
Well, I was a little older than Skip. No one can beat Skip's record. So I was 21 years old, and, you know, I had some friends working for Granite Construction. Granite's a big contractor in Reno. And they kind of told me, they're like, hey, we're working. We're making a lot of money, and the wages are good. Conditions are good. They're, you know, they're prioritizing safety. And so I came down to the hall. I had previous construction experience, and so I managed to join the union, and I was 21 years old. Now I'm 43, a little older. But yeah, that's kind of where I started. So,
and you are now the assistant business manager, is that right?
Yeah, so I'm Skip's assistant business manager. Skip is the business manager. And, you know, I've been very fortunate to work for Skip for about 16 years. You know, it's a long time.
That is a long time. So do you think you're ready for the for taking over as business manager come June?
Absolutely. Yeah. I love the union. I love the local. And, you know, my priorities is, you know, putting the members first. I like working for the members. So yeah, if anyone asks me, are you ready? Absolutely, I am ready.
Good, good, good. Skip, let's go back to you. I want to talk to you about your time there with 169. And I'm going to switch over to Eloy because he's going to look forward. I want you to kind of look back, and Eloy will look forward. So during that time, I mean, there's a lot of decades that happened on when you were a member there and still is a member. Talk to me about that. What were some of the highlights there, Skip?
Well, you know, the time that I spent, you know, worked in the field, you get to look back and see the things that you built when you were working in the field, and you still, you know, use some of those bridges and buildings and various things. And I remember talking to another guy that worked here at the office and retired. He says, you know, you're getting old when they start tearing down buildings and projects that you worked on, right?
Right.
A lot of changes over time and the various things. But once I started working at the local and you start to get the lay of the land on what's going on, you and you're negotiating the agreements and you're, you know, working on the wages and all those types of things, you know. So we've done very well with our health and welfare plan and our pension plan and all the benefits and the things for the members. As far as that goes, we've increased wages, obviously, over successive contract negotiations. We've taken our training fund, which is the seventh oldest one in the LIUNA in the nation for us. Actually, before we were an apprenticeable craft, actually had a training program here at Local 169. So we've grown that. We have a facility just east of town where we, you know, provide our training, and we own the building as paid for, and the land, we're on about 7 acres out there. So a lot of changes and improvements and various things to just keep the programs going, you know, and then obviously working with the international on the programs and the various things we have for organizing, for marketing, you know, through LESIT and the regional organizing committees. I think LIUNA strategically put a plan out. You know, I've been to 6 conventions, so I've seen a few of those things get implemented over the years, LIUNA conventions. I think we're on a good track, and we're seeing the fruits of those things as we move forward. I'm very optimistic about the future, and Eloy better be ready.
Well, he's got a good teacher. I saw the photos of your training center. In fact, if you go to the website, local169.com, you could see a video posted there. I believe it was Al DeVita was the guy that was kind of narrating it. So those of you listening right now can check that out on your own. And it looks pretty impressive. You mentioned organizing, and that's a big issue for everyone. How are we doing in your area there? Because I know it's picked up, especially the pandemic. It's kind of changed the landscape. You know that. A lot of people that were in certain jobs are saying, you know, wait a minute, I can do better, and maybe I need a union job. I need union representation here. We're seeing that in various areas of the country right now. Skip, can you speak to that?
Yeah, you know, like I say, from the pandemic, when I speak with a lot of our employers here, the contractors here, they have as much work on the books scheduled this year as they had last year, and we had a very strong year last year. So a lot of it hinges on worker shortages and recruiting people, and we have a lot of tools in place to do that. So we've grown by, you know, recruiting new members and training, graduating apprentices and doing the normal route. And then some workers, you know, come our way with contractors that are moving into the area because there's quite a bit of work here. But the homegrown or the base contractors that are here, good times and bad times, those are the ones you need to concentrate on. And it is a little more difficult when some of those contractors, they don't want to work union. So we'll spend time and, you know, recruit their workers out from underneath them, because if we
sure.
got better paying jobs with better benefits and we have the work, it's not that it's easier for us to do. And so fortunately we're good there. But as you guys know, we have resources through our regional organizing committees that we apply to that. And we have staff members here that work on that on a daily basis. And it's a constant, ever-changing battle to try to, you know, bring more employers under an agreement to provide work opportunities for our members. And it's a three-legged stool. We have to have employers, the union, and employees to make it all work.
Exactly. Eloy, I want to go to you. I understand there's a couple of solar projects happening in that area, and I would imagine being out west, you get a lot of sunshine. You want to harness that energy. You got
yes.
any details on what kind of projects we're looking at right now and as far as the workload for those projects?
Yeah, so we're projected to have – we've done 3 or 4 solar projects in the past. But we're looking to do some more in the upcoming near future in the northern part of the state. So, you know, it's really good. I mean, solar projects put a lot of members to work, and, you know, we think we'll be ready for the projects. We're looking to provide some solar training to get people ready to make sure that we have the manpower that we need to supply the manpower for those projects.
Is it tough to make sure they go union? I've been hearing this, especially when it comes to solar. There's been some pushback, I know, in labor about, you know, fossil fuels switching to renewables and all that, because the pay isn't the same in renewables. The union density isn't the same. What's the story in Nevada?
Well, I mean, yeah, so we're very fortunate. I mean, what are the contractors that are coming to the north and they're planning on doing it union, I mean, they obviously care about making sure that they have the manpower that they need. And that's kind of one of the biggest reasons that they look at union, you know, because they kind of rely on us to supply the manpower. And that's kind of something that we said, hey, we'll make sure we, you know, we'll do our best to deliver the manpower for those projects. That's one of the biggest reasons. The projects that do go non-union, I mean, I think they have a harder time manning those projects, you know? Mm-hmm. Yeah,
gotcha.
So when you need 100, 200 people for a project, and in this time, it's not easy to get. So you're going to try to partner up with, you know, to maximize your chances to meet the needs.
I'm hearing that through all the trades. There's no doubt about that. You want good workers, you got to go union. You got to go union. You got the trained workers ready to go. They're ready to rock. All right, gentlemen, I got to take a quick break. Skip Daly joining us on our live line along with Eloy Hara. You just heard Eloy. Eloy's been a member of the local for 22 years. He's going to be the next business manager when Skip retires. Skip is going to retire at the end of May. Skip's been there for 44 years, started in 1978. We'll continue the conversation right after this.
You're listening to America's Workforce with Ed Flash Ferens.
It takes LIUNA to power North America with affordable energy. The men and women of LIUNA, the Laborers International Union of North America, have the skills needed to build and maintain oil, natural gas, nuclear, solar, and wind projects that are shaping America's energy future. From new energy tech to retrofitted facilities, LIUNA members do it all. Find out what it takes to be powered by LIUNA at LIUNA.org. That's LIUNA.org.
There is unity and strength for workers.
We are the USW.
We are the USW.
The United Steelworkers.
The largest industrial union in North America.
We represent 850,000 members in the U.S., Canada, and the Caribbean.
We work in metals,
rubber,
chemicals,
paper,
oil refining, atomic energy, and the service sector.
We are steelworkers, standing strong and fighting for what's right.
We're the nurses, firefighters, and claims representatives that help keep our government services running. We respond to natural disasters. We care for our nation's veterans. And we investigate discrimination in the workplace. We are federal and D.C. government workers. And we are proud to serve the American people. Working in more than 70 agencies across the government, we know we can fulfill our mission because our union has our back. Learn more at AFGE.org. Paid for by the American Federation of Government Employees, AFL-CIO.
America's Workforce is sponsored in part by Boyd Watterson Asset Management, LLC. Find out more about our investment solutions tailored to meet the needs of Taft-Hartley funds at BoydWatterson.com.
Now, back to America's Workforce. Here's Ed Flash Ferens.
And, of course, you can catch us on various platforms, at least six of them, by the way. Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, iHeartRadio, Spotify, Pandora, and Stitcher. That's some of the big ones, but there's plenty more out there. Let's go back to our live line. We have two gentlemen joining us from Reno, Nevada today. Skip Daly, who's the business manager of LIUNA Local 169. Website is local169.com. He's been a union member since 1978, and he plans to retire at the end of May. And the next guy in line for business manager is Eloy Hara, and he's been with the local for 22 years. Skip, I saw this on the website. Again, it's local169.com, where you're urging people to keep the federal gasoline tax. And for the life of me, I can't figure this out, because you want good roads and bridges. You got to keep that tax going. What's the status with that right now? I mean, there's some lawmakers that want to get rid of that. What's the story?
Yeah, at the federal level, there's been bills introduced, I think, in both the Senate and the House to have a gas tax holiday to the end of the year. And I know our internationals put a statement out, and I've paraphrased that a little bit. Yes, people are paying higher prices at the gas pump, but it's, to me, kind of almost the worst kind of pandering. It really isn't going to make that much difference, and it will, you know, take away that resource for it will take away that resource for roads and bridges and the various things that the highway gas tax is meant to fund. And then they said, oh, well, we're going to pay that money in, the federal government. We're going to replace that money with other funds, which, if I'm looking at politically, I'm going, well, where are you getting that money from, right? It just seems to be illogical to me, and it's a feel-good type of thing. And I'm not trying to criticize some of our friends in Congress that are for it, but it, in my view, is a bad idea. And we're just trying to make our members aware and send in their comments to their representatives about it.
And I'm sure they are, no doubt about that. Yeah, well, you know, everything is political today. That's just a status that we that we live in, the kind of climate that we live in today. I want to talk about the infrastructure bill. And this is huge. I mean, it's the first time in a long time that so much money, well over $1 trillion, is going to go into bridges, water system, broadband. Any breakdown, Skip, on what it's going to mean for Nevada? Do we have those numbers yet?
We don't have the numbers yet. We're working on the process to be able to track it in the training and how much Nevada is going to get. I believe it's over $3 billion that's scheduled or looking for various projects in Nevada. And then how that gets allocated in through, I think, goes through the state government on the priority jobs. So that's still in the process. I don't think some of that has hit the streets yet, but there are other projects that are in place from previous recovery packages and various things that we're seeing the impact from now, which is good. Some side road, mm-hmm. I think, retrofit projects and various, just as an example. So the infrastructure part, we haven't seen projects directly related to that yet. But we're anticipating it and gearing up for it.
Good, good. Well, when the money hits, it's going to explode. Eloy, I want to talk to you about that, because I know you got a good apprenticeship program. We're going to need a lot of workers, and I'd like you to share your thoughts with our listeners on how you're prepping for that influx of money. You got to have a couple of ideas in your head, right?
Yeah, no, so we're currently, as a matter of fact, we're currently working on recruitment efforts to maximize our recruitment capabilities to get more apprentices into the programs. We have social media ads. We have a digital billboard truck running around. We have recruiters, guys that work in the office that are working on developing cards, posters. So we're trying to stay ahead of, you know, when the work comes, we want to be ready and we want to make sure we have a trained workforce and apprentices, you know, because mm-hmm. The apprentices are the ones that are going to, they're the future of the union. So,
absolutely.
We got to be able to do that.
All right. I want to talk about politics here, and Skip. Well, it looks like you've got some experience. You've been an assemblyman for District 31 for four terms, and I hear you're running for a state Senate district That would be District 13. Boy, you never give up. 44 years at at LIUNA, Local 169. You get into politics. Well, you put it all on your plate. So the transition to politics, let's start there. And you know what? And I want to tell you, I appreciate you doing that, because labor, the AFL-CIO, and a number of states, I know for one, New Jersey's done a really good job on this, on as to grooming union brothers and sisters for political office, whether it's a city council, whether it's a school board seat, Congress, Senate, it doesn't matter, because we know if you want change, you got to get involved in the political process. So I can only assume that's what kind of drove you into the political nature of things in Nevada. Can you share some ideas with us?
Yeah, well, when I first got into it and started working at the local, in 1995. So the first legislative session in Nevada that I went to as a lobbyist working for the union was in 1997, and learned the ropes a little bit. So then, you know, you're down there, you're seeing the sausage making, if you will, and the lawmaking and that, and you start to realize that, you know, a lot of the things you've taken for granted are state prevailing wage, workman comp issues for workers' rights, you know, paid vacation and sick leave has been issues of late, are all in legislation. They're all state laws or some overlap with the federal laws. And as easily as they were won, not as easily, but oftentimes more easy, they were won, they can be taken away if you have the wrong people in the legislature. And we experienced that in 2015 when it was just a bad voting year. Well, 2014 was the election year, and the session was in 2015. The Republicans controlled both houses, had the governor, and they, you know, started making moves to repeal and lower the raise the thresholds on the application of prevailing wage and a variety of things. Now, we made it through that with minor changes, and we put them all back. I'm telling you that as soon as we got control again, they went back. Right, as soon as we got a Democratic governor,
yeah.
And so you can see how that goes back and forth, and everything that you think you have can be taken away with the stroke of a pen or a push of a voting button. So it's important on who your representatives are. So I got involved and first ran in 2010 while I was still working at the local. So I didn't, you know, don't let people pigeonhole you and say you can't do both. You can. There are some things you have to be careful of when you're doing it so you don't pick lines and various things, but or ethics lines. We had term limits in the state, which I didn't really agree with, but the guy that was in my district in 31 was term limited out, and you know, I had his support, been friends with him for a while, and I decided to run in 2010. And I won the first two elections, lost one, then won two more, and then lost this last one, and now I'm happy to be redistricted, because we did the redistricting this year, this past session, into a open Senate seat, which is a Democratic-leaning district. I would point out that the after the redistricting previously, I was the only Democrat that won an election in a Republican-majority district in either House, at either end of the state, and I did that 3 out of 5 times. So no easy feat. It's very difficult. You got to work hard at it, but if you do work at it and you have any skills at it at all, you can be successful. It doesn't matter what the district is.
Well, that's good to hear. Now, when is the election for that district?
The District 13 right now, it's a November election. There'll be a primary in June.
All right. And you should be okay in the primary then, I take it?
I never take anything for granted. We're working hard. We know how to run the campaigns. Not my first one. And we have, fortunately, have the tools and the resources and the ability to go out and run a full-throated campaign. And I suspect that we will do okay and win the primary, but nothing is being taken for granted.
Oh, I hear you. But you know you got labor behind you, so that's a good thing. Good to hear. Well, you keep me posted on that. And, you know, we have a national audience here, and like I said, we want to drive people into this field. It's important. Elections matter. I say that on the show all the time. So, Eloy, any aspirations for political office, or are you just going to focus on becoming the next business manager?
I'm going to focus on becoming the next business manager, and my plan is to do a good job. I mean, you know, I'll tell you what, trying to fill Skip's shoes is not going to be an easy job. You've heard his, you know, all the things he has done. It's going to be tough. So, yeah, I'm going to focus on being the next business manager.
Well, best of health to you, Eloy, and certainly to Skip. Gentlemen, it's been a pleasure having both of you on the show. Again, Labor's Union Local 169. The website is local169.com, part of LIUNA, Labor's International Union of North America. LIUNA.org is a national website and also the presenting sponsor. Without LIUNA, we wouldn't be able to carry this show on radio as well as podcast. So we appreciate that. Skip, Eloy, take care and stay strong. Okay, brothers?
Thank you.
Thank you.
All right, we're going to take a quick break right now. When we come back, we're going to link up with Fred Redmond. It's our first Friday with Fred. Fred, of course, is the Secretary Treasurer of the AFL-CIO, and he is coming up next.
This is America's Workforce. More shows available at awfradio.com.
It takes LIUNA to keep America running. Over 70,000 public employees are part of LIUNA, the Laborers International Union of North America, delivering critical services such as health care and emergency response, as well as maintaining roads and sanitation systems. Even the National Postal Mail Handlers Union, representing over 47,000 U.S. postal workers, is affiliated with LIUNA. Find out what it takes for LIUNA to keep America running at LIUNA.org. That's LIUNA.
A great union requires a reliable election system. Survey and Ballot Systems is a trusted election partner with more than 30 years of expertise in managing union elections. By partnering with SBS, your union can ensure it gets an auditable process and a high level of customer service. SBS is here to help you conduct your union vote securely, transparently, and with trust building always in mind. Visit surveyandballotsystems.com to learn more.
The Heat and Frost Insulators and Allied Workers are proud to be a title sponsor for America's Workforce Radio. The Insulators Union is leading the way in the mechanical insulation industry, fire stopping, and infectious disease control. Regarded as North America's energy conservation specialist, these professionals are known for their professional work and dedication. You can learn more about the Insulators Union at insulators.org.
Buildings, bridges, skyscrapers, and more. Structures that are the face of our cities and towns were built by members of the Iron Workers Union. That's why it's important that our workforce of over 130,000 iron workers continues to be the safest and best trained in the field. With 154 training centers, we invest over $90 million annually in safety and training. We're growing the next generation of union iron workers. There are so many reasons to put your trust in our iron workers and their employers. Learn more about us at ironworkers.org.
Now, back to Ed Flash Ferens with America's Workforce.
And remember, you can check us out on Facebook and follow us on Twitter. Twitter handle AWF Union Podcast. AWF Union Podcast. By the way, this next segment brought to you in part by the United Labor Agency. Connecting people with employment. Good employment, I might add. You can find more at ulagency.org. We had Dave Meganhart on the show just a couple of days ago. In fact, they're doing another virtual job fair, and that's going to be on May 19th. And if you go to that website, ulagency.org, you'll get all the details on that. Right now, let's go to Washington, D.C. and join my union brother. Love talking to this guy, Fred Redmond. It's our first Friday with Fred. Fred is the Secretary Treasurer of the AFL-CIO. Fred, how we doing today, my brother?
Doing good, Flash. Doing good. Happy to be with you.
Well, you are traveling all over, even outside the country. I was reading earlier about your trip to Panama on behalf of the Trade Union Confederation of America. You are president of that group, and a big topic was organizing. In fact, a lot of it, what's going on at Amazon and Starbucks. I bet you they were happy to hear that news, I take it, right?
Oh, yeah, they were very happy to hear it. Yeah, I was in Panama for a week. I'm the president of the Trade Union Confederation of America. Like you said, Flash, the acronym, we refer to it as TUCA. And TUCA is one of the seven regions of the ITUC, the International Trade Union Confederation. And I'm president of the region that's over the Americas. So we represent 28 million workers in South America, North America, and the Caribbean. And we had a week-long strategy session in Panama. And it was very good. You know, we talked about organizing, and we talked about global supply chains and the similarities in terms of low-wage workers, throughout the Americas. And we did share a lot of conversation. We spent a lot of time talking about Amazon. You know, Amazon is a worldwide corporation, and, you know, Amazon workers in South America and the Caribbean were very, very interested in what happened in the United States. And there's an effort by the global trade union movement to, go after Amazon workers around the world.
Yeah, there's a new energy out there, as you well know. And unfortunately, absolutely, that didn't carry over to the other warehouse. That vote failed. But still, it's happening. Starbucks is happening, I believe, at 250 locations for Starbucks. So the needle, right, I always say, is moving in the right direction. We appreciate that. I want to switch over to inflation. And we've been hitting this pretty hard about why costs are going up and how to fix it. And Fred, you know this. I mean, you're involved in politics, and you know everybody, when prices go up, the guy in the White House gets the blame. Of course, Biden's right, getting blamed for everything, but it's important that we educate our members and educate everybody about why these costs are going up. And I have to salute the AFL-CIO on this, because it's if you go to their website, they have it all laid out, and I'd like to get your take on this. I'm sure you're a big part in putting this together. So can you share your thoughts with our listeners?
Well, first of all, you know, we needed to, make sure that we're presenting accurate information to our 12.5 million members, you know, throughout the United States, but also the workers in general and to the general public. So, we ran this ad, like you stated, this on our website, to really put focus on the reason for inflation, because it is affecting a lot of working families throughout this country. And I do want to start off by saying that the inflation that we're suffering through today in America, you know, which is as high as I understand it didn't reach 8%, is a serious problem. But, you know, we just want to be clear that it don't have anything to do with the policies of this administration. I mean, when we look at where we've been, I mean, the global supply chains have just literally been wrecked by the pandemic. And while demand has started to bounce back across the world, you know, factories weren't able to produce as many goods. Mm-hmm. And there was clogged ports, and there was driver shortages that meant that goods took longer to reach the buyers. And, you know, look, since the U.S. is the biggest importer of several goods, it was arguably amongst the worst affected by the global supply chain issue. And, the pandemic also exposed this country's reliance on China and Taiwan for semiconductors, you know, which are extremely critical for the automotive industry. And the supply chain issue really just halted the automotive industry, you know, when they couldn't get the parts, okay, when they couldn't get those semiconductors to go into new automobiles. And then we have, high energy prices have also been contributing to inflation. High energy prices, Flash, you know, directly affect the consumer price index numbers. But, you know, high fuel prices have led to an increase in logistics costs for companies, which eventually those costs get passed on to the consumer. And then, you know, we look at the labor shortage situation in the United States. Look, I mean, you know, the labor situation is being fueled by an increase in the demand of workers, rightfully so, to demand better wages. And workers have been, you know, putting themselves in a much better position to negotiate higher wages. And, you know, these wage hikes is welcome. But, you know, we don't think that the wage hikes is a direct cause of inflation. So what we wanted to do on our website, and also highlight the fact that some companies are profiteering from our inflation.
No, that's not happening. Now, is it?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, unfortunately, it is. I mean, some of the leading food processing companies in the United States that have reported, I'm talking about enormous profit growth, you know, which, you know, they surpass their revenue growth, and they're raising prices much more than their cost inflation. And when the prices of almost all of the assets, you know, going up from stocks, commodities, you know, then what we have is people taking advantage of the situation, okay, and arbitrarily raising costs. So, you know, what we wanted to do on our website is to really educate the public. You know, the information was compiled by some very reputable economists from both sides of the aisle, you know, and we took a deep dive into this. And, you know, we don't think it's an excuse, but we think people have a right to understand, because this is a serious issue, exactly how it developed.
We urge those of you listening right now to take the survey. I don't know how you're doing on the survey. This just came out a couple of days ago, but it's up AFL-CIO.org/member survey. And what the AFL-CIO is essentially doing, and this is national. I mean, this is the 12 million plus members that make up the AFL-CIO. What matters? What else matters to you? It's important.
Right.
I mean, you know, like I said, we still live in a democracy. It may be fragile. It may be fragile, but it's important that we get input from the members, because that's
Absolutely.
What unions are all about, right?
Right, exactly. And, you know, what we, you know, wanted to do was give the members a space, you know, where they could dive into these issues and, you know, also share some thoughts and concerns. I mean, look, you know, we have to, you know, we're going into a election cycle that's going to be very, very critical, particularly in light of the recent issues involving the Supreme Court. And, you know, we want to dispel, or that's what we hope to do, is to dispel any false narratives.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, regardless of, you know, how painful the truth may be, you know, we need to get down to real people really understanding, you know, the cause for their pain and anxiety during this period of time. And also, you know, to really, really have a conversation with our members about what this administration have done in 18 months that they've been in office, well, 15 months exactly, that they have been in office in terms of addressing these issues.
Right.
But, you know, look, inflation is real, it's there, it's global. The discussions we had in Panama, you know, we talked about how inflation is affecting countries throughout South America and Canada and Mexico. But, you know, there seem to be a false narrative out there that inflation is being caused by the policies of this administration, which have actually, okay, that have actually helped people get through this serious period of time. You know, policies such as the child care tax credit and the things that this administration have done to help stabilize people, to try to help them get through this serious moment in history.
There you go. Fred Redmond, Secretary Treasurer of the AFL-CIO, our first Friday with Fred. Well said, my man. You take care, and we'll do this in another month, okay?
Okay, looking forward to it. Have a good weekend.
You too. All right, that's it for another edition of America's Workforce. Coming up on Monday, we talk to the painters and the iron workers. Until then, all of you have a safe and wonderful weekend.
That concludes another episode of the America's Workforce Radio podcast. Thanks for listening, and be sure to subscribe so you never miss a show. America's Workforce is a production of Labor Tools and BMA Media Group. Find out more information online at labortools.com.